Thank you for tuning in to the Sea Ranch Thespians audio production of The Importance of Being Earnest by Oscar Wilde, adapted for Reader's Theater by Melvin R. White. I'm Carol Emery, one of the sponsors of the Thespians. We look forward to welcoming you back to the barn in the not-too-distant future. This audio play features John Handel as Ernest, John Carlson as Algernon, Karen Saratoni as Cecily, Karen L. Russell as Gwendolyn, Lynn Atkins as Lady Bracknell, Phil Atkins as Lane and Merriman, Jerry Taylor as Miss Prism, and Brian Holderman as Master of Ceremonies. The director is Brian Holderman. Come with us now to London.
The first act of The Importance of Being Earnest takes place in the morning room of Algernon Moncrief's flat in London. It is luxuriously and artistically furnished. As the curtain rises, we hear the sound of a piano in an adjoining room. Lane is arranging afternoon tea on the table.
Did you hear what I was playing, Lane?
I didn't think it polite to listen,
sir. Oh, I'm sorry for that. For your sake. Of course, I don't play accurately. Anyone can play accurately. But I play with wonderful expression.
Yes, sir.
Have you got the cucumber sandwiches cut for Lady Bracknell?
Yes, sir.
Oh, and by the way, Lane, I see from your book that on Thursday night when Lord Shoreman and Mr. Worthing were dining with me, 8 bottles of champagne are entered as having been consumed.
Yes, sir. 8 bottles and a pint.
Why is it that at a bachelor's establishment, the servants invariably drink the champagne? I ask merely for information.
I attribute it to the superior quality of the wine, sir. I've often observed that in married households, the champagne is rarely of a first-rate brand.
Good heavens! Is marriage so demoralizing as that?
I believe it is a very pleasant state, sir. I've had very little experience about it myself to the present. I've only been married once. That was in consequence of a misunderstanding between myself and a young woman.
I don't know that I'm much interested in your family life, Lane.
No, sir. It is not a very interesting subject. I never think of it myself.
Very natural, I'm sure. That will do, Lane. Thank you.
Well, thank you, sir.
Lane's views on marriage seem somewhat lax. Really, if the lower orders don't set us a good example, what on earth is the use of them? They seem, as a class, to have absolutely no sense of moral responsibility.
Mr. Ernest Worthing.
How are you, my dear Ernest? What brings you up to town?
Oh, pleasure, pleasure. What else should bring one anywhere? Eating as usual, I see, Algy.
I believe it is customary in good society to take some slight refreshment at 5 o'clock. Where have you been since last Thursday?
In the country.
What on earth do you do there?
When one is in town, one amuses oneself. When one is in the country, one amuses other people. It is excessively boring.
Oh, and who are the people you amuse?
Oh, neighbors, neighbors.
Got nice neighbors in your part of Shropshire?
Perfectly horrid. Never speak to one of them.
How immensely you must amuse them. By the way, Shropshire is your county, is it not?
Eh, Shropshire? Yes, of course. Hello, why all these cups? Why cucumber sandwiches? Why such reckless extravagance in one so young? Who is coming to tea?
Oh, merely Aunt Augusta and Gwendolyn.
How perfectly delightful.
Yes, that is all very well, but I'm afraid Aunt Augusta won't quite approve of your being here.
May I ask why?
My dear fellow, the way you flirt with Gwendolyn is perfectly disgraceful. It is almost as bad as the way Gwendolyn flirts with you.
I am in love with Gwendolyn. I have come up to town expressly to propose to her.
I thought you'd come up for pleasure. I call that business.
How utterly unromantic you are.
I really don't see anything romantic in proposing. It is very romantic to be in love, but there is nothing romantic about a definite proposal. Why, one may be accepted. One usually is, I believe. Then the excitement is over. The very essence of romance is uncertainty. If ever I get married, I'll certainly try to forget the fact.
I have no doubt about that, dear Algy. The divorce court was specially invented for people whose memories are so curiously constituted.
Oh, there's no use speculating on that subject. Divorces are made in heaven. Please don't touch the cucumber sandwiches. They are especially for Aunt Augusta.
Well, you have been eating them all the time.
That is quite a different matter. She is my aunt. Have some bread and butter. The bread and butter is for Gwendolyn. Gwendolyn is devoted to bread and butter.
Mmm, and very good bread and butter it is, too.
Well, my dear fellow, you need not eat as if you were going to eat at all. You behave as if you were married to her already. You are not married to her already, and I don't think you ever will be.
But why on earth do you say that?
Well, in the first place, girls never marry the men they flirt with. Girls don't think it right.
Oh, that is nonsense.
It isn't. It is a great truth. It accounts for the extraordinary number of bachelors that one sees all over the place. In the second place, I don't give my consent.
Your consent?
My dear fellow, Gwendolyn is my first cousin. And before I allow you to marry her, you'll have to clear up the whole question of Cecily.
Cecily? What on earth do you mean? What do you mean, Algy, by Cecily? I don't know anyone of the name of Cecily.
No? Do you remember the cigarette case you left the last time you dined here?
Do you mean to say that you have had my cigarette case all this time?
Your cigarette case?
Yes, mine.
Well, according to the inscription inside, this case is a present from Cecily, and you said you didn't know anyone of that name.
Well, if you want to know, Cecily happens to be my aunt.
Your aunt?
Yes. Charming old lady she is, too. Lives at Tunbridge Wells.
Oh. And why does your aunt call you her uncle? The inscription says, "From little Cecily, with her fondest love to her dear Uncle Jack." Besides, your name isn't Jack at all. It's Ernest.
It isn't Ernest. It's Jack.
You have always told me it was Ernest. I have introduced you to everyone as Ernest. You answer to the name. You're the most earnest-looking person I ever saw in my life. It's perfectly absurd saying your name isn't Ernest. It's on your cards. I have one here. Mr. Ernest Worthing, room 4, the Albany. I'll keep it as proof that your name is Ernest if you ever attempt to deny it to me or to Gwendolyn or to anyone else.
Well, my name is Ernest in town and Jack in the country, and the cigarette case was given to me in the country.
Yes, but that doesn't account for the fact that your small aunt Cecily calls you her dear uncle. You know, I suspect you of being a confirmed Bunburyist.
Bunburyist? What on earth do you mean by a Bunburyist?
I'll explain after you tell me why you're Ernest in town and Jack in the country.
Very easy. Old Mr. Thomas Cardew, who adopted me when I was a little boy, made me in his will guardian to his granddaughter, Miss Cecily Cardew. Cecily, who addresses me as her uncle from motives of respect, lives at my place in the country under the charge of her governess, Miss Prism.
Now go on. Why are you Ernest in town and Jack in the country?
As Cecily's guardian, I have to adopt a high moral tone on all subjects. In order to get up to town, I pretend to have a younger brother named Ernest who lives at the Albany and gets into the most dreadful scrapes. That, my dear Algy, is the whole truth, pure and simple.
The truth is rarely pure and never simple. However, what you really are is a Bunburyist, Ernest, as I am. In fact, you are a very advanced Bunburyist.
What on earth do you mean?
Well, you have invented a very useful younger brother called Ernest in order that you may be able to come up to town as often as you like. And I've invented an invaluable permanent invalid called Bunbury in order that I may be able to escape Aunt Augusta and go down into the country whenever I choose.
I am not a Bunburyist at all. If Gwendolyn accepts me, I am going to kill my brother. Indeed, I think I'll kill him in any case. Cecily is a little too much interested in him. So I'm going to get rid of Ernest. I strongly advise you to kill off Mr. Bunbury.
Never! Oh, excuse me. There's Aunt Augusta and Gwendolyn now.
Oh, good afternoon, Algernon.
Oh, hello, Gwendolyn. Where's Aunt Augusta?
She's waiting for you at the foot of the stairs. Go help her.
Oh, certainly. Mr. Worthing's here. I'll be back in no time.
Charming day it has been, Miss Fairfax.
Pray, don't talk to me about the weather, Mr. Worthing. Whenever people talk to me about the weather, I always feel they mean something else.
I do mean something else.
I thought so.
Miss Fairfax, ever since I met you, I have admired you more than any girl I have ever met.
Yes, I'm quite aware of that fact. And for me, you have always had an irresistible fascination. Even before I met you, I was far from indifferent to you.
You mean you...
Oh, yes. My ideal has always been to love someone of the name Ernest. There is something in the name that inspires absolute confidence.
You really love me, Gwendolyn?
Oh, passionately, dear.
Darling, you don't know how happy you've made me.
Oh, my own Ernest.
But you don't really mean to say that you couldn't love me if my name wasn't Ernest?
But your name is Ernest.
Well, yes, I know it is, but supposing it was something else. Personally, darling, I don't much care for the name of Ernest. I think Jack, for instance, a charming name.
Jack? Oh, no, no, no. Jack is a notorious domesticity for John. I truly pity any woman who's married to a man called John. The only really safe name is Ernest.
Gwendolyn, I must get christened at once. I mean, we must get married at once. There is no time to be lost.
Married? Mr. Worthing.
Well, surely, you know that I love you, and you said that...
Oh, darling, I adore you. But you haven't proposed to me yet. Nothing's been said about marriage at all. The subject hasn't even been touched on.
Well, may I propose to you now?
I think it would be an admirable opportunity. And to spare you any possible disappointment, I think it only fair to tell you that, yes, I am determined to accept you.
Gwendolyn, will you marry me?
Of course I will, darling. How long have you been about it? I'm afraid you've had very little experience in how to propose.
My own one. I have never loved anyone in the world but you.
Yes, but men often propose for practice. I know my brother Gerald does. All my girlfriends tell me, so I... Oh, Ernest, what wonderfully blue eyes you have. They're quite, quite blue. I hope you'll always look at me just like that. Especially when there are other people present.
Mr. Worthing, rise, sir, from this semi-recumbent posture. It is most indecorous.
Mama, I must beg you to retire. This is no place for you. Besides, Mr. Worthing wasn't quite finished yet.
Finished what, may I ask?
I am engaged to Mr. Worthing, Mama.
Pardon me, you are not engaged to anyone. When you do become engaged to someone, I or your father, should his health permit him, will inform you of that fact. An engagement should come on a young girl as a surprise, pleasant or unpleasant, as the case may be. It is hardly a matter that she could be allowed to arrange for herself. And now I have a few questions to put to you, Mr. Worthing. While I'm making these inquiries, you, Gwendolyn, will wait for me below in the carriage.
Mama?
In the carriage, Gwendolyn? Gwendolyn, the carriage?
Yes, Mama.
Mr. Worthing, I feel bound to tell you that you are not in my list of eligible young men. Although I have the same list as the dear Duchess of Bolton has, we work together, in fact. However, I am quite ready to enter your name should your answers be what a really affectionate mother requires. Do you smoke?
Well, yes. I must admit, I smoke.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it. Huh? A man should always have an occupation of some kind. There are far too many idle men in London as it is. How old are you?
29.
A very good age to be married at. I have always been of the opinion that a man who desires to get married should know either everything or nothing. Which do you know?
I know nothing, Lady Bracknell.
I'm pleased to hear it. I do not approve of anything that tampers with natural ignorance. Ignorance is like a delicate, exotic fruit. Touch it, and the bloom is gone. The whole theory of modern education is radically unsound. Fortunately, in England at any rate, education produces no effect whatsoever. If it did, it would prove a serious danger to the upper classes and probably lead to acts of violence in Grosvenor Square. What is your income?
Between 7,000 and 8,000 a year.
In land or in investments?
In investments, chiefly.
Oh, that is satisfactory. What between the duties expected of one during one's lifetime and the duties exacted from one after one's death, land has ceased to be either a profit or a pleasure. It gives one position and prevents one from keeping it. That's all that can be said about land.
I have a country house with some land, of course, attached to it, about 1,500 acres, I believe.
A country house? How many bedrooms? Well, that point can be cleared up afterwards. You have a townhouse, I hope? A girl with a simple, unspoiled nature like Gwendolyn could hardly be expected to reside in the country.
Well, I own a house in Belgrave Square, but it is let by the year to Lady Bloxham. Of course, I can get it back whenever I like at 6 months' notice.
Lady Bloxham? I don't know her.
Oh, she goes about very little. She is a lady considerably advanced in years.
Ah, well, nowadays that is no guarantee of respectability of character. What number in Belgrave Square?
149.
Oh, the unfashionable side. I thought there was something. However, that could easily be altered. Now, to minor affairs. Are your parents living?
I have lost both my parents.
Both? Well, that seems like carelessness. Who was your father? He was evidently a man of some wealth. Was he born in what the radical papers call the purple of commerce? Or did he rise from the ranks of aristocracy?
I am afraid I really don't know. The fact is, Lady Bracknell, I said I had lost my parents. It would be nearer to the truth to say that my parents seem to have lost me. I don't actually know who I am by birth. I was found.
Found?
The late Mr. Thomas Cardew, an old gentleman of a very charitable and kindly disposition, found me and gave me the name of Worthing because he happened to have a first-class ticket for Worthing in his pocket at the time. Worthing is a place in Sussex. It is a seaside resort.
Where did the charitable gentleman who had a first-class ticket for this seaside resort find you?
In a handbag.
A handbag?
Yes, Lady Bracknell. I was in a handbag. A somewhat large black leather handbag with handles to it. An ordinary handbag, in fact.
In what locality did this Mr. James or Thomas Cardew come across this ordinary handbag?
In the cloakroom at Victoria Station. It was given him in mistake for his own.
The cloakroom? At Victoria Station?
Yes, the Brighton line.
Oh, the line is immaterial, Mr. Worthing. I confess I feel somewhat bewildered by what you have just told me. To be born, or at any rate, bred in a handbag, whether it has handles or not, seems to me to display a contempt for the ordinary decencies of family life that remind one of the worst excesses of the French Revolution. And I presume you know what that unfortunate movement led to.
Well,
as for the particular locality in which the handbag was found, a cloakroom at a railway station might serve to conceal a social indiscretion. Well, has probably indeed been used for that purpose before now. But it could hardly be regarded as an assured basis for a recognized position in good society.
May I ask you, then, what you would advise me to do? I need hardly say I would do anything in the world to ensure Gwendolyn's happiness.
I would strongly advise you, Mr. Worthing, to try and acquire some relations as soon as possible. and to make a definite effort to produce at any rate one parent of either sex before the season is quite over.
Well, I don't see how I could possibly manage to do that. I can produce the handbag at any moment. It is in my dressing room at home. I really think that should satisfy you, Lady Bracknell.
Me, sir? What has it to do with me? You can hardly imagine that I and Lord Bracknell would dream of allowing our only daughter, a girl brought up with the utmost care, to marry into a cloakroom and form an alliance with a parcel. Good morning, Mr. Worthing.
Good morning. For goodness sake, don't whistle that ghastly tune. Algy, how idiotic you are.
Didn't it go off all right, old boy? You don't mean to say Gwendolyn refused you. I know it is a way she has. She is always refusing people. I think it is most ill-natured of her.
Oh, Gwendolyn is as right as a trivet. As far as she is concerned, we are engaged. Her mother is perfectly unbearable. Never met such a gorgon. I don't really know what a gorgon is like, but I am quite sure that Lady Bracknell is one. I beg your pardon, Algy. I suppose I shouldn't talk about your own aunt in that way before you.
Oh, my dear boy, I love hearing my relations abused. It is the only thing that makes me put up with them at all. Relations are simply a tedious pack of people who haven't got the remotest knowledge of how to live, nor the smallest instinct about when to die.
You don't think there is any chance of Gwendolyn becoming like her mother in about 150 years, do you, Algy?
Oh, all women become like their mothers. That is their tragedy. And no man does, and that's his. By the way, did you tell Gwendolyn the truth about your being Ernest in town and Jack in the country?
My dear fellow, the truth isn't the sort of thing one tells to a nice, sweet, refined girl. What extraordinary ideas you have about the way to behave to a woman.
The only way to behave to a woman is to make love to her, if she is pretty, and to someone else if she is plain.
Oh, that is nonsense.
All right, then, what about your brother Ernest, the profligate Ernest? What about him?
Oh, before the end of the week, I shall have got rid of him. I'll say he died in Paris of apoplexy. Lots of people die of apoplexy quite suddenly, don't they?
Yes, but it's hereditary, my dear fellow. It's a sort of thing that runs in families. You had better say a severe chill.
You are sure a severe chill isn't hereditary or anything of that kind?
Of course it isn't.
Very well, then. My poor brother Ernest is carried off suddenly in Paris by a severe chill. That gets rid of him.
But I thought you said that Miss Cardew was a little too much interested in your poor brother Ernest. Won't she feel his loss a good deal?
Oh, that is all right. Cecily is not a silly romantic girl, I'm glad to say. She has got a capital appetite, goes for long walks, and pays no attention at all to her lessons.
Ooh, I would rather like to see Cecily.
Cecily and Gwendolyn are perfectly certain to be extremely great friends. I'll bet you anything you like that half an hour after they have met, they will be calling each other sister.
Women only do that when they have called each other a lot of other things first. And now, my dear boy, if we want to get a good table at Willie's, we must go and dress. Do you notice nearly 7?
Oh, it is always nearly 7.
Well, I'm hungry.
I never knew you when you weren't.
What shall we do after dinner? Go to a theater?
Oh, no. I loathe listening.
Well, let us go to the club.
Oh, no. I hate talking.
Well, we might trot round to Empire at 10.
Oh, no. I can't bear looking at things. It is so silly.
Well, what shall we do?
Nothing.
Oh, it is awfully hard work doing nothing. However, I don't mind hard work where there is no definite object of any kind.
Miss Fairfax.
Gwendolyn, upon my word.
Algy. Kindly turn your back. I have something very particular to say to Mr. Worthing.
Really, Gwendolyn? I don't think I can allow this at all.
Algy, you always adopt a strictly immoral attitude towards life. You are not quite old enough to do that.
My own darling.
Oh, Ernest, we may never be married. From the expression on Mama's face, I fear we never shall. Few parents nowadays pay any regard to what their children say to them.
The old-fashioned respect for the young is fast dying out. Oh, whatever influence I had over Mama, I lost at the age of 3. Although she may prevent us from becoming man and wife, I may marry someone else and marry often. Nothing she can possibly do, though, will alter my eternal devotion to you.
Dear Gwendolyn.
Oh, and that story of your romantic origin, as relayed to me by Mama, with unpleasing comments, well, it's naturally stirred the deeper fibers of my nature. Your Christian name has an irresistible fascination. The simplicity of your character makes you exquisitely incomprehensible to me. Now, your town address at the Albany, I have that, but what is your address in the country, dear?
The Manor House, Walton, Hertfordshire. What are you writing on your cuff, Algy?
Me? Well, nothing at all.
And there's good postal service, Ernest, I suppose? It may be necessary to do something desperate. That, of course, will require serious consideration. I will communicate with you daily, my darling.
Yes, my love.
How long do you remain in town?
Till Monday.
Good. Algy, you may turn around.
Oh, thanks. I've turned around already.
You may also ring the bell.
You will let me see you to your carriage, my own darling?
Certainly, my love.
Lane, I will see Miss Fairfax out.
Yes, sir.
A glass of sherry, Lane.
Yes, sir.
Tomorrow, Lane, I'm going Bunbury in Walton, Hertfordshire.
Yes, sir.
I shall probably not be back till Monday. You can put my dress clothes, my smoking jacket, and all the Bunbury...
Yes, sir.
I hope tomorrow will be a fine...
Yes, sir.
Lane, you are a perfect pessimist.
I do my best to give satisfaction, sir.
There's a sensible, intellectual girl. The only girl I have ever cared for in my life. What on earth are you so amused at?
Oh, I'm a little anxious about my poor Bunbury, that's all.
If you don't take care, your friend Bunbury will get you into a serious scrape someday.
Oh, I love scrapes. They're the only thing that are never serious.
Oh, that is nonsense, Algy. You never talk anything but nonsense.
Well, nobody ever does.
Thus, as Act One of The Importance of Being Earnest ends, we know that Algernon has a plan. A plan to meet this Cicely Cardew, Jax Ward. Now, as the curtain rises on Act Two, we find ourselves in the garden of the manor house, Jack's home in the country. It's an old-fashioned garden full of roses, and there's a table covered with dull, gray, and brown, lugubrious-looking books. Miss Prism, the governess, is seated at the table. Cecily is watering the flowers. Miss Prism calls.
Cecily? Cecily! Surely such a utilitarian occupation as the watering of flowers is rather Moulton's duty than yours, especially at a moment when intellectual pleasures await you. Your German grammar is on the table. Pray open it at page 15. We will repeat yesterday's lesson.
Oh, but I don't like German. It isn't at all a becoming language. I know perfectly well that I look quite plain after my German lesson.
Child, you know how anxious your guardian is that you should improve yourself in every way. He laid particular stress on your German as he was leaving for town yesterday. Indeed, he always lays stress on your German when he is leaving for town.
Dear Uncle Jack is so very serious. Sometimes he is so serious that I think he cannot be quite well.
Your guardian enjoys the best of health, and his gravity of demeanor is especially to be commended in one so comparatively young as he is. I know no one has a higher sense of duty and responsibility.
I suppose that is why he often looks a little bored when we three are together.
Cecily, I am surprised at you. Mr. Worthing has many troubles in his life. Idle merriment and triviality would be out of place in his conversation. You must remember his constant anxiety about that unfortunate young man, his brother.
I wish Uncle Jack would allow that unfortunate young man, his brother, to come down here sometimes. We might have a good influence over him, Miss Prism. I am sure you certainly would. You know German and geology, and things of that kind influence a man very much.
I do not think that even I could produce any effect on a character that, according to his own brother's admission, is irretrievably weak and vacillating. Indeed, I am not sure that I would desire to reclaim him. I am not in favor of this modern mania for turning bad people into good people at a moment's notice. As a man sows, so let him reap. You must put away your diary, Cecily. I really don't see why you should keep a diary at all.
I keep a diary in order to enter the wonderful secrets of my life. If I didn't write them down, I should probably forget all about them.
Memory, my dear Cecily, is the diary that we all carry about with us.
Yes, but it usually chronicles the things that have never happened and couldn't possibly have happened. I believe that memory is responsible for nearly all the 3-volume novels that Moody sends us.
Do not speak slightingly of the 3-volume novels, Cecily. I wrote one myself in earlier days.
Did you really, Miss Prism? Oh, how wonderfully clever you are. Oh, I hope it did not end happily. I don't like novels that end happily. They depress me so much.
The good ended happily and the bad unhappily. That is what fiction means.
I suppose so. But it seems very unfair. And was your novel ever published?
Alas, no. The manuscript, unfortunately, was abandoned. I use the word in the sense of lost or mislaid. To your work, child, these speculations are profitless. I'll leave you now to study your German, Cecily.
Oh, very well, Miss Prism. Horrid political economy, horrid geography, horrid, horrid German.
Mr. Ernest Worthing has just driven over from the station. He has brought his luggage with him. Here's his card.
Oh, Mr. Ernest Worthing, B4, the Albany W. Uncle Jack's brother. Did you tell him Mr. Worthing was in town?
Yes, miss. He seemed very disappointed. I mentioned that you and Miss Prism were in the garden. He said he was anxious to speak to you privately for a moment.
Ask Mr. Ernest Worthing to come here. I suppose you'd better talk to the housekeeper about a room for him.
Yes, miss.
Oh, I have never met any really wicked person before. I feel rather frightened. I'm so afraid he will look just like everyone else. He does.
You must be my little cousin Cecily, I'm sure.
You are under some strange mistake. I am not little. In fact, I am more than usually tall for my age. But I am your cousin Cecily. You, I see from your card, are Uncle Jack's brother, my cousin Ernest, my wicked cousin Ernest.
Oh, I am not really wicked at all, Cousin Cecily. You mustn't think that I am wicked.
If you are not, then you have certainly been deceiving us all in a very inexcusable manner.
Oh, well, of course, I've been rather reckless.
I am glad to hear it.
In fact, now that you mention the subject, I've been very bad in my own small way.
I don't think you should be so proud of that, though I am sure that it must have been very pleasant.
It is much pleasanter being here with you.
I can't understand how you are here at all. Uncle Jack won't be back until Monday afternoon.
Oh, well, that is a great disappointment. I'm obliged to go up by the first train on Monday morning.
I think you had better wait until Uncle Jack arrives. I know he wants to speak to you about your emigrating.
About my what?
Your emigrating. He has gone up to pack your belongings. Uncle Jack is sending you to Australia.
Australia? I'd sooner die.
Well, he said at dinner on Wednesday night that you would have to choose between this world, the next world, and Australia.
Well, this world is good enough for me, Cousin Cecily.
Yes, but are you good enough for it?
I'm afraid I'm not. That is why I want you to reform me. You might make that your mission, if you don't mind, Cousin Cecily.
I'm afraid I haven't time this afternoon.
Well, would you mind my reforming myself this afternoon?
That is rather quixotic of you. But I think you should try.
I will. I feel better already.
You are looking a little worse.
Well, that's because I'm hungry.
Oh, how thoughtless of me. Oh, I should have remembered that when one is going to lead an entirely new life, one requires regular and wholesome meals. Won't you come in?
Thank you.
And Cecily and Algernon leave to go into the house to feed the ever-hungry algae. After a few moments, Miss Prism returns, expecting to find Cecily hard at work. She is somewhat taken aback to find the garden empty.
Oh, I wonder where Cecily is. Well, her books are here. I'll just wait. Oh, Mr. Worthing. This is indeed a surprise. We did not look for you till Monday afternoon.
I have had to return sooner than I expected, Miss Prism.
I trust your funereal garb does not betoken some terrible calamity.
My brother.
More shameful deaths and extravagance?
Dead.
Your brother Ernest? Dead?
Quite dead, Miss Prism.
What a lesson for him. I trust he will profit by it.
Poor Ernest. He had many faults, but it is a sad, sad blow.
Very sad indeed. Were you with him at the end?
No, he died abroad, in Paris. I had a telegram last night.
Will the interment take place here?
No, he seemed to have expressed a desire to be buried in Paris.
In Paris? I feel that hardly points to any very serious state of mind at the last. Shall I mention your brother's neighbor to our minister, Dr. Chasuble, so that he can make some slight allusion to this domestic affliction next Sunday?
Do. Oh, and by the way, speaking of your minister, I suppose Dr. Chasuble knows how to christen, all right?
Well, certainly. Is there any particular infant in whom you are interested, Mr. Worthing?
No. The fact is, I would like to be christened myself this afternoon, say about 5 o'clock. Will you arrange it for me, Miss Prism?
With pleasure, but...
Ah, here is Cecily, my dear child.
Uncle Jack! Oh, I am pleased to see you back. Why, Uncle Jack, what's the matter? You look so sad.
Lass, I...
Cheer up. I've got such a surprise for you. Who do you think is here? Your brother.
Who?
Your brother, Ernest. He arrived about half an hour ago.
These are very joyful tidings.
Nonsense. I haven't got a brother. I mean, he's dead.
How absurd. Uncle Jack. Goodness, dead? Oh, Ernest.
Good heavens.
Brother Jack, I have come down from town to tell you that I'm very sorry for all the trouble I have given you and that I intend to lead a better life in the future. Won't you shake hands?
No.
Uncle Jack, do be nice. There is some good in everyone. Ernest has just been telling me about his poor invalid friend, Mr. Bunbury, whom he goes to visit so often, and surely there must be much good in one who is kind to an invalid, and then leaves the pleasures of London to sit by a bed of pain.
Bunbury, I won't have him talk to you about Bunbury. I won't have him talk to you about Bunbury or about anything else. Come, Miss Prism, while you are making arrangements with Dr. Chasuble about the matter I mentioned, I'll order the dog-cart for Mr. Ernest.
Dog-cart, Uncle?
Yes. Mr. Ernest has been suddenly called back to town. Come, Miss Prism.
Yes, Mr. Worthing.
Oh, dear Ernest, must we part?
No, indeed. I have no intention of going.
But Uncle Jack...
Oh, I don't care about Jack. I don't care for anybody in the whole world but you. I love you, Cecily. You will marry me, won't you?
Oh, you silly boy, of course. I've loved you ever since I knew Uncle Jack had a wicked brother.
What a perfect angel you are, Cecily.
You mustn't laugh at me, darling, but it has always been a girlish dream of mine to love someone whose name was Ernest.
But, sweetheart, do you mean to say you couldn't love me if I had some other name?
What name?
Well, any name. Algernon, for instance. Serious, Cecily, if my name was Algy, couldn't you love me?
I might respect you, Ernest. I might admire your character. But I fear that I should not be able to give you my undivided attention.
Oh, Cecily, your rector here is, I suppose, thoroughly experienced in the practice of all rites of the church?
Oh, yes. Dr. Chasuble is a most learned man. He has never written a single book, so you can imagine how much he knows.
Oh, I must go and see him at once on a most important christening. Most important business.
Oh?
I shan't be away more than half an hour.
Couldn't you make it 20 minutes?
Oh, one kiss and I'll be back in no time. Don't go away.
What an impetuous boy he is. I like his hair so much. Oh, I must enter his proposal in my diary.
Excuse me, miss.
Well, Merriman?
Miss Fairfax is here to see Mr. Worthing on a very important business, as she puts it.
Miss Fairfax, I don't believe
I... Shall I show her in here, miss?
Yes.
Very good. Miss Fairfax.
How do you do, Miss Fairfax? Pray let me introduce myself to you. My name is Cecily Cardew.
Cecily Cardew? Why, what a sweet name. You are here on a short visit, I suppose?
Oh, no. I live here. I am Mr. Worthing's ward.
Strange. Ernest never mentioned to me that he had a ward.
I beg your pardon. Did you say Ernest?
Yes.
Oh, but Ernest Worthing isn't my guardian. It is his older brother.
Ernest never told me about a brother.
I am sorry to say that they have not been on good terms for a long time. Oh, Miss Fairfax, perhaps I ought to tell you, Mr. Ernest Worthing and I are engaged to be married.
Married? Impossible. Mr. Worthing is engaged to me.
You must be under some misconception, Miss Fairfax. Ernest proposed to me exactly 5 minutes ago. See? I've entered it in my diary.
Very curious. Ernest asked me to be his wife yesterday afternoon at 5:30.
Oh, here's my guardian now.
Gwendolyn.
Ernest, my Ernest.
Darling.
One moment. May I ask you if you're engaged to marry this young lady?
Little Cecily? Of course not.
There. You see, Miss Cardew.
I knew there was a misunderstanding, Miss Fairfax. The gentleman whose arm is at present around your waist is my dear guardian, Mr. Jack Worthing.
What?
This is Uncle Jack.
Jack? Oh.
Here comes Ernest now. Oh, Ernest.
Oh, my love.
One moment, Ernest. May I ask if you are engaged to marry this young lady?
What young lady? Good heavens, Gwendolyn?
Yes. To good heavens, Gwendolyn.
Of course not.
I knew there was some slight error, Miss Cardew. The gentleman who is now embracing you is my cousin, Mr. Algernon Moncrief.
Oh, Algernon Moncrief? Are you called Algernon?
I cannot deny it.
Is your name really Jack?
I admit it. My name has been Jack for years.
Miss Fairfax... A gross deception has been practiced on both of us.
My poor wounded Cecily.
My sweet wronged Gwendolyn.
Gwendolyn, Cecily, it is very painful for me to be forced to speak the truth. But I have no brother Ernest. I have no brother at all.
No brother at all?
None.
Had you never had a brother of any kind?
Never.
Oh, then Cecily... I'm afraid it's quite clear. Neither of us is engaged to be married to anyone.
Oh, it is not a very pleasant position for a young girl suddenly to find herself in, is it?
Let's go into the house. They will hardly venture to come after us there.
No, men are so cowardly, aren't they?
Act 2 ended with Cecily and Gwendolyn retiring into the house, casting scornful looks back at Jack and Algernon. Now, the third act takes place in the morning room of the manor house, to which the girls have retreated. The boys have finally returned and are being questioned by Cecily and Gwendolyn.
Mr. Moncrief, why did you pretend to be my guardian's brother?
Why, so that I might have an opportunity of meeting you, Cecily.
Oh,
and Mr. Worthing, what explanation can you offer me for pretending to have a brother?
Why, so that I might have an opportunity of coming up to town to see you, Gwendolyn.
Oh.
Gwendolyn, do you think we should forgive them?
Well, how can we, Cecily? Their Christian names are still an inseparable barrier.
Oh, yes, true.
My Christian name, but Gwendolyn, I've arranged to be christened by Dr. Chasuble at 5:30.
You are? Why, that's funny. I've arranged to be christened by Dr. Chasuble at 5:30.
You mean you are both going to be christened, Ernest?
Yes. Yes.
Darling, you're forgiven. You may kiss me.
Darling, you may kiss me, too.
Don't disturb us, Merriman.
Lady Bracknell.
Good heavens.
Gwendolyn, what does this mean?
Merely that I am engaged to be married to Mr. Worthing, Mama.
Algernon?
Yes, Aunt Augusta.
Who is this young lady whose hand you are holding?
That lady is Miss Cecily Cardew, my ward.
I am engaged to be married to Cecily, Aunt Augusta.
I beg your pardon?
Mr. Moncrief and I are engaged to be married, Lady Bracknell.
I do not know whether there is anything peculiarly exciting in the air of this particular part of Herefordshire, but the number of engagement that goes on seems to me considerably above the proper average that statistics have laid down for our guidance. I think some preliminary inquiry on my part would not be out of place. Mr. Worthing, is Miss Cardew at all connected with any of the larger railway stations in London? I merely desire information. Well, until yesterday, I had no idea that there were any families or persons whose origin was terminus.
Miss Cardew is the granddaughter of the late Mr. Thomas Cardew of 149 Belgrave Square, Southwest Gervais Park, Dorking, Surrey, and the Sporran, Fifthshire, North Britain.
That sounds not unsatisfactory. Three addresses always inspire confidence, even in tradesmen. But what proof have I of their authenticity?
Miss Cardew's family solicitors are Messrs. Markby, Markby, and Markby.
Markby, Markby, and Markby? A firm of the very highest position in their profession. Well, so far, I'm satisfied.
How extremely kind of you, Lady Bracknell. I have also in my possession, you will be pleased to hear, certificates of Miss Cardew's birth, baptism, whooping cough, registration, vaccination, confirmation, and the measles, both the German and the English variety.
Ah, a life crowded with incident, I see. Though perhaps somewhat too exciting for a young girl. I am not myself in favor of premature experiences. Gwendolyn, the time approaches for our departure. We have not a moment to lose. As a matter of form, Mr. Worthing, I had better ask you if Miss Cardew has any little fortune?
Oh, about £130,000 in the funds. That is all. Goodbye, Lady Bracknell. So pleased to have seen you.
A moment, Mr. Worthing. £130,000? And in the funds? Miss Cardew seems to me a most attractive young lady now that I look at her.
A few girls of the present day have any really solid qualities, any of the qualities that last and improve with time. We live, I regret to say, in an age of surfaces. Come over here, dear. Oh, pretty child. Your dress is sadly simple, and your hair seems almost as nature might have left it. But we can soon alter all that. Kindly turn around, sweet child. No, the other side is what I want. Yes, quite as I expected. There are distinct social possibilities in your profile. The two weak points in our age are its want of principle and its want of profile. The chin is a little higher, dear. Oh, style largely depends on the way the chin is worn. They are worn very high just at the moment. Algernon?
Yes, Aunt Augusta.
There are distinct social possibilities in Miss Cardew's profile.
Oh, Cecily is the sweetest, dearest, prettiest girl in the whole world. And I don't care a tuppence about social possibilities.
Never speak disrespectfully of society, Algernon. Only people who can't get into it do that. Dear child, of course you know that Algernon has nothing but his debts to depend upon. But I do approve of mercenary marriages. When I married Lord Bracknell, I had no fortune of any kind, but I never dreamed for a moment of allowing that to stand in my way. Well, I suppose I must give my consent.
Oh, thank you, Aunt Augusta.
Cecily, you may kiss me.
Thank you, Lady Bracknell.
Oh, you may also address me as Aunt Augusta for the future.
Thank you, Aunt Augusta.
The marriage, I think, had better take place quite soon.
Thank you, Aunt Augusta.
Thank you, Aunt Augusta.
To speak frankly, I am not in favor of long engagements. They give people the opportunity of finding out about each other's character before marriage, which I think is never advisable.
I beg your pardon for interrupting you, Lady Bracknell, but this engagement is quite out of the question. I am Miss Cardew's guardian, and she cannot marry without my consent until she comes of age. That consent I absolutely decline to give.
Upon what grounds, may I ask? Algernon is an extremely, I may almost say, an ostentatiously eligible young man. He has nothing, but he looks everything. What more can one desire?
It pains me very much to have to speak frankly to you, Lady Bracknell, about your nephew. But the fact is that I do not approve at all of his moral character. I suspect him of being untruthful.
Untruthful? My nephew, Algernon? Impossible. He's an Oxonian.
I fear there can be no possible doubt about the matter. This afternoon, during my temporary absence in London on an important question of romance, he obtained admission to my house by means of the false pretense of being my brother. He succeeded in the course of the afternoon in alienating the affections of my only ward. He subsequently stayed to tea and devoured every single muffin. And what makes his conduct all the more heartless is that he was perfectly well aware from the first that I have no brother, that I have never had a brother, and that I don't intend to have a brother, nor not even of any kind. I distinctly told him so myself yesterday afternoon.
Mr. Worthing, after careful consideration, I have decided it entirely to overlook my nephew's conduct to you.
Oh, that is very generous of you, Lady Bracknell. My own decision, however, is unalterable. I decline to give my consent.
Come here, sweet child. How old are you, dear?
Well, I'm really only 18, but I always admit to 20 when I go to evening parties.
You are perfectly right in making some slight alteration. Indeed, no woman should ever be quite accurate about her age. It looks so calculating. 18, but admitting to 20 at evening parties. Well, it will not be very long before you are of age and free from the restraint of tutelage. So I don't think your guardian's consent is, after all, a matter of any importance.
Pray excuse me, Lady Bracknell, for interrupting you again. But it is only fair to tell you that, according to the terms of her grandfather's will, Miss Cardew does not come legally of age till she is 35.
That does not seem to me to be a grave objection. 35 is a very attractive age. London society is full of women of the very highest birth who have of their own free choice remained 35 for years.
Algy, could you wait for me until I was 35?
Oh, of course I could, Cecily. You know I could.
Yes, I felt it instinctively. But I couldn't wait all that time. I hate waiting, even 5 minutes for anybody. It always makes me rather cross. And I'm not punctual myself, I know, but I do like punctuality in others, and waiting, even to be married, is quite out of the question.
Then what is to be done, Cecily?
I don't know, Mr. Moncrief.
My dear Mr. Worthing, as Miss Cardew states positively that she cannot wait till she is 35, a remark which I'm bound to say seems to me to show a somewhat impatient nature. I would beg of you to reconsider your decision.
But my dear Lady Bracknell, the matter is entirely in your own hands. The moment you consent to my marriage with Gwendolyn, I will most gladly allow your nephew to form an alliance with my ward.
You must be quite aware that what you propose is out of the question.
Then a passionate celibacy is all that any of us can look forward to.
That is not the destiny I propose for Gwendolyn. Algernon, of course, can choose for himself. Come, dear. We have already missed 5, if not 6, trains. To miss any more might expose us to comment on the platform.
Oh, Miss Prism, come here, would you?
Miss Prism, did I hear you mention a Miss Prism?
Yes, Lady Bracknell. Miss Prism has been for the last 3 years Miss Cardew's esteemed governess and valued companion.
Prism?
Yes, ma'am?
Come here, Prism.
Yes, ma'am.
Where is that baby?
Oh, well.
28 years ago, Prism, you left Lord Bracknell's house, number 104 Upper Grosvenor Square Street, in charge of a perambulator that contained a baby of the male sex. You never returned. A few weeks later, through the elaborate investigations of the Metropolitan Police, the perambulator was discovered at midnight, standing by itself in a remote corner of Bayswater. It contained the manuscript of a 3-volume novel of more than the usually revolting sentimentality.
Oh.
But the baby was not there. Prism, where is that baby?
Lady Bracknell, I admit with shame that I do not know. I only wish I did. The plain facts of the case are these. On the morning of the day you mention, a day that is forever branded on my memory, I prepared as usual to take the baby out in its perambulator. I also had with me a somewhat old but capacious handbag in which I intended to place the manuscript of a work of fiction that I had written during my few unoccupied hours. In a moment of mental abstraction for which I can never forgive myself, I deposited the manuscript in the bassinet and placed the baby in the handbag.
But where did you deposit the handbag?
Do not ask me, Mr. Worthing.
Miss Prism, this is a matter of no small importance to me. I insist on knowing where you deposited the handbag that contained the infant.
I left it in the cloakroom of one of the larger railway stations in London.
What railway station?
Victoria. the Brighton line.
I must retire to my room for a moment, Gwendolyn. Wait for me here.
If you are not too long, I will wait here for you all of my life.
What do you think this means, Lady Bracknell?
I dare not even suspect, Cecily. I need hardly tell you that in families of high position, strange coincidences are not supposed to occur. They are hardly considered the thing.
Noise! Uncle Jack seems strangely agitated.
Oh, this noise is extremely unpleasant. It sounds as if he was having an argument. Oh, I dislike arguments of any kind. They are always vulgar and often convincing. I wish he would arrive at some conclusion.
Oh, this suspense is terrible. I hope it'll last.
Is this the handbag, Miss Prism? Examine it carefully before you speak. The happiness of more than one life depends upon your answer.
It seems to be mine. Yes, here is the injury it received through the upsetting of a Gower Street omnibus in younger and happier days. Here is the stain on the lining caused by the explosion of a temperance beverage, an incident that occurred at Leamington. And here on the lock are my initials. I had forgotten that in an extravagant mood, I had had them placed there. The bag is undoubtedly mine. I'm delighted to have it so unexpectedly restored to me. It's been a great inconvenience being without it all these years.
Miss Prism, more is restored to you than this handbag. I was the baby you placed in it.
You?
Yes, Mother.
Mr. Worthing, I am unmarried.
Unmarried? I do not deny that as a serious blow, but after all, who has the right to cast a stone against one who has suffered? Cannot repentance wipe out an act of folly? Why should there be one law for men and another for women? Mother, I forgive you.
Mr. Worthing, there is some error. Lady Bracknell is the lady who can tell you who you really are.
Lady Bracknell? I hate to seem inquisitive, but would you kindly inform me who I am?
I am afraid that the news I have to give you will not altogether please you. You are the son of my poor sister, Mrs. Moncrief, and consequently Algernon's elder brother.
Algy's elder brother? Then I have a brother after all. I knew I had a brother. I always said I had a brother. Cecily, how could you have ever doubted that I have a brother?
My own? But what own are you? What is your Christian name, now that you've become someone else?
Good heavens, I had quite forgotten that point. Your decision on the subject of my name is irrevocable, I suppose.
I never change, except in my affections.
What a noble nature you have, Gwendolyn.
Then the question had better be cleared up at once. Aunt Augusta, a moment. At the time when Miss Prism left me in the handbag, had I been christened already?
Every luxury that money could buy, including christening, had been lavished on you by your fond and doting parents.
Then I was christened. That is settled. Now, what name was I given? Let me know the worst.
Being the eldest son, you were naturally christened after your father, Lieutenant Colonel Ernest John Moncrief.
Ernest. I always told you, Gwendolyn, my name was Ernest, didn't I? Well, it is Ernest after all. I mean, it naturally is Ernest.
Yes, the general was called Ernest. I knew I had some particular reason for disliking the name.
Ernest! My own Ernest! I felt from the first that you could have no other name.
Gwendolyn, it is a terrible thing for a man to find out suddenly that all his life he has been speaking nothing but the truth. Can you forgive me?
I can, for I feel you are sure to change.
Gwendolyn, my own true love.
And Cecily, my own love.
My nephew, you seem to be displaying signs of triviality.
On the contrary, Aunt Augusta, I've now realized for the first time in my life the vital importance of being earnest.
Thank you for joining us for our third audio play. We wish you the very best.